Bullying is in the news again, and while we often talk about it taking place in schools, this time we're dealing with it with professional football. The Miami Dolphins have suspended a veteran player indefinitely after he allegedly sent threatening messages that included racial slurs to a younger teammate.
The NFL is investigating what is being called a case of hazing and harassment, and it's raising questions about the bullying culture in sports at all levels.
Joining us now to talk about this is Hank Neuer. He is an author and professor at Franklin College. His research specialty is hazing education. Hank Neuer, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
I'd like to start, for those listeners who might not be familiar with what has been developing in Miami, if you could just kind of give us a thumbnail sketch of the situation there and what it is we're discussing.
Well, we're talking about hazing and bullying, which is normally in the NFL a way to get camaraderie, albeit not in the best possible way, which is to put rookies through the insulting or silly or demeaning types of behaviors in order to accept them. But in this particular case, we had a player named Richie Incognito who sent messages to a player named Jonathan Martin, which had apparently, if true, had racist and threatening innuendos attached to it. It may be a form of hazing, however, because we've had several cases in which the hazing was not to have camaraderie, but to get someone to leave the team or to exclude someone from the team.
And before we get into some more of the specifics of this particular case, I'd like to maybe talk about the idea of hazing and bullying and, you know, this whole idea of rituals and organizations and where that line becomes drawn when it becomes too much, when you start getting into dangerous territory.
Well, the clear line is if it comes into the area of either hate speech or criminal behavior. And at the high school level, the criminal behavior includes sodomy, sexual assaults, and very, very demeaning behavior. At the college level, there's been a few of those, but mainly what the problem has been at the college level in athletics, including deaths, would be initiations that require a large amount of alcohol and have had either the deaths or close calls.
And so how prevalent is this? I mean, obviously, hazing takes place in any number of organizations, whether you're talking about medical doctors, you know, who have to work endless hours and that sort of thing. But or, you know, you hear about fraternity pranks. But in terms of sports, is this something that is at every level of sports in your experience, or is it just at some of the more elite ones where the pressure is the greatest?
Well, we do know that it is something that is attached to status and power, and a University of Maine study shows us that approximately 50% of all male and female athletes from the time they start in junior high through high school through college have been hazed. There's been no study at the professional level. On the other hand, you would probably count on one hand maybe six or seven fingers how many teams say they do not have hazing. Most of the teams have some kind, but a far more benign type of hazing than is done here. Usually it's kind of silly, making people wear backpacks, do servile sorts of things, sing. But a couple of the teams take it farther, taping people to goalposts, embarrassing them. But in my experience, there's been nothing like this Miami case.
Yeah, and as I looked at it, I was doing a little reading in advance of this interview. And again, a lot of this is alleged, and we don't know all the facts, but it appears that this sort of behavior, particularly with these two players, has been going on for quite some time. Given that, where do you start placing responsibility? Is it on the players themselves? Obviously, people have to be responsible for their own behavior at some level. Or is it on management? Is it on the team owners? Is it on the league? Where do you start pointing fingers?
I'm going to try to do it quickly, but I'm going to point it at the league first. In 1999, we had a case with the New Orleans Saints, which was a clear case of gang-like hazing with a gauntlet, where Jeff Danish and Cam Cleveland, two rookies, were injured in a gauntlet and beaten pretty badly. Mike Ditka, who was the coach, did not address the issue. Neither did the New Orleans Saints. They merely traded the perpetrator to the Indianapolis Colts. So we were on alert there. And there's been increasing numbers of incidents. The New York Giants last year with a player being thrown into an ice tub against his will. 2 years ago, Dez Bryant with the Dallas Cowboys refusing to carry shoulder pads and causing quite a problem. So at the end of it, we are talking about a labor workforce problem. And so my fingers would point to the commissioner of the NFL first and foremost, and second to the owners of the clubs that support hazing.
So given what you've just said, I mean, this appears to be an issue that doesn't sound particularly secret. It sounds like there have been plenty of public displays of this. Why have we gotten to this point where we're talking about this particular incident that's gone so far today?
Basically, you're looking at an incident that has gotten a lot of, if not positive attention, a lot of entertainment value with ESPN and other networks. If you look up the term benign hazing or good-natured hazing on the internet, you'll be overwhelmed with the number of sports writers who've put it in. This has been looked at as a quote-unquote time-honored tradition for many years, ignoring the fact that in cases such as this particular one, things can get well out of hand, number one. Number two, it's ignoring the fact that there have been so many sodomies and sexual assaults at the high school level and that the NFL players are role models for these particular individuals. And number three, that hazing in the collegiate level is very, very common, and there have been close calls and deaths associated with athletics in colleges. And this issue should have really been taken care of in the 90s and not perpetuated right to today.
Which begs two questions. First of all, has it gotten worse since the 90s? And secondly, if it should have been addressed, why hasn't it been, in your estimation?
I think at the NFL level, it's about the same until we got to the last 3 years with players being thrown into ice tubs. And this particular one, which smacks of hate speech, which is a whole other issue, and real harassment. At this particular point, we're seeing that in sports, whether it's steroids, all kinds of other scandals, that there is a kind of tolerance of behavior in athletes that maybe the public is starting to get sick of, and maybe this is starting to send a message, especially in the area of bullying and hazing.
There's also that mentality in a lot of sports, though, that, you know, to be there, you've got to be tough, that to be there, you've got to be able to, you know, play the game, however you want to phrase that. And it has to be difficult for a lot of these, you know, professional athletes who are supposed to be these big, tough, you know, football players to come forward and say, oh, no, I've been bullied. It seems to me it's got to be a difficult step for those folks to take.
It is very difficult, especially with 21- and 22-year-old players who are asked to buy jewelry or to spend $5,000, $7,000 on a meal for these veterans. We've seen the same kind of behavior with 18-, 19-, and 20-year-old women who have been subjected to abuse by photographers when they are modeling. The whole issue, however, comes up to management that they should be looking out for these players, that coaches such as Joe Philbin should know what's happening around them. All over the country, we've seen high school coaches dismissed because they didn't look enough into what was happening on their teams and know that the hazing was there. Joe Philbin would have to be blind to know that there wasn't something going on all this time and to step in and say, hold enough.
You're listening to the Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're talking about the issues of hazing, of bullying in the National Football League and in sports in general with our guest this hour. Hank Neuer is with us from Franklin College, and we're talking with him about bullying and hazing in sports, and we'd like to hear from you, too. Is this something that you've been familiar with, either on the receiving end or just sort of on the watching end? Have you seen this happen somewhere? How did it affect you? How did it affect the person involved in the bullying? And is hazing in any form, say benign hazing, ever okay? If you're a coach, how do you deal with these issues? Give us a call. We'd like to hear from you. 800-642-1234 or send us an email. Our address is talk@wpr.org.
We'll get to your calls right after the news. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. I'm here today filling in for Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. We're continuing our conversation with Hank Neuer from Franklin College about sports hazing and bullying in the wake of an incident in Miami involving two football players from the Miami Dolphins. We'd like to hear from you, too. What do you know? What have you witnessed about bullying, about hazing in sports, whether it's at the high school level, the college level, or the professional level? Have you seen things in public that rise to that level of bullying? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. You can also post comments to the Central Time Facebook page. We're going to go to the phones right now. We've got a caller who would like to join in, and we begin with Jim from New Lisbon. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Well, the question that I was calling in to answer was could there or were there instances of benign hazing? And I come from a military background. I've got over 30 years. I'm retired now, but over 30 years of military experience. And so in my career, I was both part of and the person that it was happening to, and some different levels of hazing. But the issue that we had and what I would bring forward is that there was a conscious effort to keep things safe, to keep things light. There were, you know, when somebody would say, okay, this is enough, that was enough. It wasn't or doesn't have to be to the level where somebody is put in danger, certainly not where somebody is harassed and things like that. So I think that, yes, there is a potential for a benign hazing, but it's a conscious decision that leadership has to be part of.
Let's put that to our guest. And Jim, thanks so much for the call. Hank Neuer, we've heard this term, benign hazing. You heard Jim's comment, and first I'd like to get a reaction to you from that. Is there such a thing in your mind as benign hazing, something, as he said, that where you keep things safe, you keep things light?
Back in his day, I would think that there was. I mean, and we've seen movies such as Alex Karras of Detroit asking rookies to sing in the movie Paper Lion, and certainly that was benign in those particular days. This has advanced in the military, where we've had suicides, at the high school level, where we've had sodomies, and at the collegiate level, where we've had deaths, and now at the pro level, where we're involved in the Incognito affair. Things have ratcheted up in such a way that the times have changed and the reaction to it has changed. Two things have happened. Number one, at least on paper, the military brass in every one of the divisions has said no more hazing and that there would be punishments for it. The problem is, as officers back off and the leadership, as Jim has mentioned, who used to be in charge and hold things back, have stepped back, and it's more at the troop level where some troop members, finding someone asleep at the switch or not measuring up, have taken punishment into their own hands. And so it has gotten complicated, but what is not complicated is no longer do I believe there is benign hazing.
And when you have this conversation, how widespread a perception is this in your experience, where there still is a belief that benign hazing exists? I mean, do you find yourself having to do a lot of what you consider to be education, bringing people up to date with what you see really happening?
It's mainly trying to take all the emails and put people in touch with either journalists, psychologists, or others who can help them. The latest being 2 days ago, because of this incident, where from Minot, North Dakota, a man rode in from the oil fields talking about the hazing he was going through as a newcomer at 45 and wondering why there were no stops to it. And it's kind of interesting at the occupational level, and this is an occupational instance, let's make no mistake, the longest sentences were 17 years and 5 years in a death at a company called Republic in Texas a couple of years ago, whereas at the fraternity level, for example, the death of Samuel Mason just a few months ago, it was $1,000 per man. So what is a human life worth in terms of a hazing at the college level in Virginia? $1,000 per man. But in Florida, you could get 5 years for a hazing incident that reaches the felony level, plus 12 years for manslaughter, but it won't affect a Miami Dolphin because the Florida law says specifically it must be a student guilty of hazing, not anyone who's involved in an occupation.
We've been talking a lot about some of the problems you see at various levels of sports, and we've been hearing a lot about some teams that are clearly not living up to some standards. In your estimation, as you look around, are there teams, are there organizations, are there leagues that are doing it right, that are getting a message, and what does it look like when they're doing it right?
Oh, absolutely. When Peyton Manning was with the Indianapolis Colts, he won the award that's named for me, the Hank Neuer Anti-Hazing Hero Award from hazingprevention.org, because he said just quite simply, there's enough pressure on rookies already. We want them to perform on the field. That's really all it takes to end hazing, is simply not to do it. And when I interviewed Ozzie Smith, a former St. Louis great, in Cooperstown at an event I was at, he talked about either team captains or the real leaders, if they're not the captains in the locker room, stepping up and putting an end to these things. In the case of Miami, I don't see anyone really stepping up and trying to stop whatever Mr. Incognito was doing.
Do you think, though, that the incident might give others pause around the country, whether they're in the NFL or in some of the college sports you've talked about, that this could serve as a turning point for some people? Or do you just see this as another incident in a long list of incidents?
No, this is different. Absolutely. I've been covering this since a death at Nevada, Reno in the mid-70s, and wrote about it for Human Behavior magazine, plus four books later. I have never seen so many columns in a single 24-hour period coming out against hazing, whether it be ESPN radio people, former professional athletes, or even Fan magazine, which is atypical, Fan magazine editors. There's been a huge, huge reaction here, and I think in part because we're not just talking about hazing and bullying, we're also talking about potential hate crimes and threatening behavior.
Do you have some advice for people who might be seeing or witnessing some of this behavior or hearing about it, from their kids who might be playing ball someplace or playing sports someplace? Because a lot of times, you know, when you're talking about coaches, when you're talking about sports, you're talking about, you know, people who are popular, people who are powerful. How do you give the message? You know, what do you tell people who want to try to shine a light on this? How can they do that and not wind up, you know, on the receiving end of something themselves?
Well, in one case, I mean, really what bothers me is that the abused become the abusers in terms of hazing. Even when we're looking at athletes going against non-athletes, the term Columbine comes to mind. And those unfortunate people who reacted way, way too much and too cruelly and too dangerously, and how all that happened. There's no good that really comes of it. But the other part would be to talk about laws, where Florida has a very tough law. If you're a student, you go over to Wisconsin and you've got two paragraphs and three extra sentences trying to address a very complicated law. Wisconsin's hazing law is one of the worst in the country. It has a Class E felony, which takes a single sentence and in no way, shape, or form could ever, ever make it through the courts.
And do you see that changing around the country? It sounds like you're saying there's sort of a patchwork out there right now. Are there any efforts underway to change some of these laws, these statutes?
Unfortunately, there have been three attempts to have a federal law, all of them flawed, trying to take away student funds, for example. There's never been a coordinated effort to go after all of it, military, high school, collegiate, pro, and occupational. And we have a constitution, and really any kind of a law should apply to all of those. Unfortunately, all of those groups have constituents, all of them have lobbying powers, all of them have loud voices, and we've never been able to do that.
So given all of that, do you feel as though you're able to make a difference, that you're going to affect some sort of change yourself and with others who work with you?
I believe that we will not. I believe that the deaths, and I believe that outrageous incidents such as this will have some influence on the general public. But I'm near 70 years old. I've been doing this since the mid-70s. And pretty much can say that hazing will be alive and sick during my lifetime right to the end. It's not changed that much.
Hank, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Hank Neuer is an author and professor who specializes in hazing education.